Dr. William Luther Pierce and Men of Valor, 1996.
Hello. A couple of weeks ago, the actor Marlon Brando was interviewed on a television talk show, and he got a little careless. He blurted out something which everyone in the media and in show business knows, but which no one is supposed to say. Marlon Brando said that Jews own and run Hollywood, and that they run it for their own benefit. They run it to suit themselves and no one else. The films they make portray other ethnic groups unfavorably, but the Jews portray themselves only in the most favorable light. Well, sir, what else is new? Next, someone will be announcing that the Earth goes around the sun. Ha, you know, that's a funny thing. The Jews and their allies reacted to Brando's statement about the way the Christian church reacted 400 years ago to Galileo's statement about the relationship between the earth and the sun. They screamed for Brando's blood, and at the same time, they tried to obscure the issue and distract people's attention away from the central point, namely, the Jewish control of the media. They called Brando an anti-Semite. They began wailing about the so-called Holocaust. They stepped up their demands for laws against what they like to call hate speech. The same sort of thing happened about a year ago when a British journalist, a reporter for the London Daily Telegraph, wrote an article about Hollywood pointing out that all of the top executives in the motion picture industry are Jews. The Jewish establishment greeted this revelation in exactly the same way, denying what was obviously true and at the same time trying to make people feel guilty for realizing that it was true. They yelled anti-Semitism and trotted out their favorite gas chamber stories. Weren't 6 million enough? They moaned. So much hate. They acted as if the simple statement of truth about their control of Hollywood were an act of persecution, and that anyone who didn't immediately blot it from his mind were an anti-Semite. Now, this sort of behavior, this pretense of shocked and wounded innocence, has worked wonderfully for the Jews for the past 50 years. They've been able to intimidate most people into keeping their mouths shut most of the time. They have made the average American so afraid of being labeled a racist or an anti-Semite that they have been able to enforce their own code of political correctness, a code under which no one may say anything about a Jew except an expression of praise or sympathy. It's a fascinating situation. They've been able to enforce this code under which no one may say that they control the media only because they do control the media. It is their control of the media which gives them the power to enforce their code of political correctness on the public. And they certainly have most of the public buffaloed. Or do they? They raised such a fuss about Marlon Brando's comments earlier this month that an internet poll was taken to find out what the public reaction to the fuss was. One of the major internet access providers, Prodigy, took the poll, and the results were encouraging. The Prodigy poll found that despite all of the Jewish screaming about Brando's comments being anti-Semitic, half of those polled didn't think what Brando had said was anti-Semitic at all, but was a simple statement of fact. Jews do give themselves especially favorable treatment in Hollywood films, they said. Yes, it is encouraging to learn that despite all the media brainwashing, 50% of the public hasn't been fooled. That raises my estimate of the public's intelligence and power of perception. Now, if that 50% would be willing to stand up and say in public what they will say in an anonymous poll. My estimate of the public's character and courage also would be raised, and so would my hopes for the future of our people. You know, it is important to be intelligent and perceptive. It is important not to be fooled by our enemies. It is important to be able to see through their lies and deception. But it is more important, much more important, to have courage and to be honorable in one's behavior. It is important to have valor. That's something which is sadly lacking in America today, I'm afraid. Despite what Mr. Brando said, I'm not inclined to give him much credit for valor either. I'm inclined to believe that he had a few martinis in him when he gave that interview, because the next day he was groveling and apologizing. What's really unfortunate is that we don't have a valorous ruling class in America to provide leadership and to set standards for others. Without such a class, the country cannot long survive. We do have a ruling class of sorts, of course. There is always a ruling class of some type. But the men who rule America today are certainly not men of valor. They are lawyers, bureaucrats, rich businessmen, scribes, and Pharisees. They are men without ideology, men whose only fixed principle is always to do what is advantageous for themselves. And, in a sense, they are the best of their type. That is, they have worked harder, been smarter and meaner, and hewed more closely to the party line, to the established body of cant, than those who didn't make it to the top. The fittest in any society survive and prosper. But valor, unfortunately, does not seem to have survival value in 20th century American society. At least, not the kind of valor which we remember fondly from bygone centuries. What would an old-fashioned Yankee or a Southern gentleman do in today's America? How would he react upon encountering a black male swaggering down the sidewalk with a white woman on his arm? Suppose he came face-to-face on the street with one of the filthy creatures who has made a career in politics, in the media, or in the pulpit by helping to bring about the state of affairs in which white women dare to be seen in public on the arms of blacks. How long could a valorous man stay out of prison? The best men today know that they are living in enemy-occupied territory, and upon such a sidewalk encounter, they only grit their teeth and pass in silent rage, while the worst display an ingratiating smile. I'm reminded of something Alexander Solzhenitsyn wrote about life in the Soviet Union 70 years ago, when the Jews and their allies were consolidating their grip on the Russian people. In cities like Moscow, Solzhenitsyn wrote, the black vans would go out from secret police headquarters every night. A van would pull up in front of an apartment building, and four or five secret police agents would get out and knock on a door. Then they would make an arrest, someone who had been overheard making a politically incorrect remark or had been seen reading a politically incorrect book. The person would be taken away and never be seen again. This happened hundreds of times every night. The head of the secret police was an especially vicious Jewish thug named Genrikh Yagoda. The arrest and the murders in the basement of secret police headquarters went on night after night, month after month. And Solzhenitsyn lamented the fact that no one ever put up any resistance. Even though the Reds had confiscated most privately owned firearms, there were still a few around. Even without firearms, it wouldn't have been especially difficult for a few brave and determined men for a few men of valor to ambush one of these secret police patrols and kill the secret policeman. After this had happened a few times, the patrols very likely would have found other things to concern themselves with besides arresting politically incorrect citizens. The cops could have spent more time with their donuts and coffee, and Yagoda could have spent more time preparing his next five-year plan. But there was no resistance. There were no men of valor. The people were like sheep. The murders continued. And I'm afraid that after the Jews have their hate crime and hate speech laws in place in this country, Americans will put up no more resistance to the FBI than the Russians did to their secret police 70 years ago. One of my favorite authors is Brooks Adams, the 19th century American economist and historian. In his book, The Law of Civilization and Decay, Adams put forth the idea that the spiritual climate of a particular period in history favors the survival and proliferation of men with a particular inner orientation, while driving men with a different orientation out of existence, much in the way the physical environment favors or disfavors a particular somatic trait. Adams divided men roughly into two classes, spiritual man and economic man. The former are what I would call men of valor. Adams saw their epitome in the English yeomanry of the Middle Ages, freeholding farmer warriors. They flourish during the period when a new civilization is being established. The other class, economic man, epitomized by the merchants and bureaucrats who later replaced the yeomen, flourishes during the period of a civilization's decay and collapse. Adams pinpointed democracy as an institution congenial to economic man, but especially inimical to the existence of spiritual man. The entire Western world, not just America, has been spiritually dead since the Second World War. Economic man has swarmed over its corpse, fattening himself on its material remains and multiplying mightily. Physical collapse may not yet be imminent, but the decadence is profound and it is irreversible. Valor, sorely needed to see us through the coming night and hold us to a worthy purpose until the new dawn, is a memory growing fainter by the decade. As the West continues its slide into chaos, strong men, white and non-white, will rise to provide some degree of order and security for their adherents. Some will not be much more than local mafia chiefs. Others will carve out regional or even national constituencies based on common economic interests, common ideologies, common ethnicities, or some combination of these. In each case, the leaders of these groups will be distinguished by valor of a sort. They will be men who have proved themselves tougher, more energetic and aggressive, and cleverer than their rivals. They will command respect as well as obedient members of their groups, which can be said for America's present leaders. We will see more and more a return to leadership based on personal strength rather than institutional sanction, to natural leadership, the kind which existed among our people thousands of years ago before we began building cities and writing laws, and which still exists among many non-white populations today. That's still the way it is in some more or less civilized areas just outside the borders of the Western world, in places like Lebanon, for example, and in Latin America. Now, rule by mafia bosses may be fine for Levantines and Latins, but we need more than a valor based only on toughness, cleverness, and ambition. The West has no shortage of tough, clever, ambitious men. And we still have many who are physically strong and courageous, although perhaps not so many these days as we would like. The valor we remember, and the valor we must have again, depends at least as much on moral courage as on physical courage. Even more, it depends on the inner sense of direction which must guide the man of valor if his courage and strength are to be used to a worthy end. Originally, the word valor meant value, worth. A man's worth was a measure not of what he owned or controlled, however, not of how many shares he could buy in the stock market or how many votes he could collect at the polls, but of what he was. The ideal man of valor is guided unerringly by his inner compass. He is imperturbable and implacable. His loyalty to his cause is his honor, and his actions are as unaffected by considerations of personal comfort or safety as by the opinions of lesser men. How can we have such men to lead us in this age of Jewish television, democracy, and the supremacy of the marketplace? A man doesn't acquire valor simply by making a resolution to act valorously. It is the product of a lifetime of right living and right thinking by a man born with the right stuff in him. Surely, men of our race are still being born with the right stuff. Economic man may be forcing spiritual man out of existence generation by generation, but the process is not complete yet. Our problem is to provide an environment which does not stunt or warp the spirits of our best men and women. The environment which prevails in America today produces from our best stock merely lawyers tricky enough to outshyster the trickiest Jew, businessmen hard-driving enough to beat out the most grasping Levantine competitor, professionals in every field willing to jettison scruples and truckle to alien arbiters in order to stay ahead of the pack. Children raised on a steady diet of MTV simply do not become men or women of valor. When the chaos in America has grown to the point that there is no longer steady work for lawyers and corporation executives, the same stock will yield merely gang leaders meaner and tougher than the meanest and toughest mafioso rival, if the spiritual climate remains unchanged. What we must do, no matter what it takes, is change that climate. We must devise a way to nurture the best seed that we have and to provide a regimen and a tutoring, an upbringing and an inculcation for the yield of that seed, which will once again give us men of real valor in the best sense of the word. It certainly would be easier to do this, easier to create a new atmosphere in which valor can flourish, if we controlled the news and entertainment media which our enemies control. If we, instead of the Jews about whom Mr. Brando complained, owned Hollywood, for example, we could do a lot in that direction. Well, we don't own Hollywood, and we don't control the television networks, and we don't own the New York Times or the Washington Post, like the enemies of our people do. But we do get this program out every week on shortwave radio and on satellite and on a number of AM radio stations. You also can listen to American Dissident Voices broadcasts on the Internet if you have a computer with a fast modem and a sound card. Just check out our worldwide website at www.natvan.com. That's Natvan, N-A-T-V-A-N, for National Vanguard Books, the sponsor of this program. At our website, you can listen to this week's broadcast, as well as to a collection of our earlier broadcasts. Even if you don't have a sound card, you can download free copies of the transcripts of our programs. Our work to make this program available to a broad section of the public through a number of different media is possible only with your support. We're working now to extend the reach of our message by adding new broadcasting stations to our network. We're also working to develop new media for our message. We want to reach the public through video and through compact discs, as well as through radio. We need your help to do this. We can't do it without your help. And we need your help now, because the people who own Hollywood and their allies in the Clinton government are pushing very hard for new laws which would make this program illegal. They want to be able to put people like Marlon Brando in prison for telling the truth about the Hollywood Jews. They want to put me and my associates in prison for bringing you the truth through this program and through the Internet and through the books and magazines which we publish. They want to make telling the truth about them a hate crime. They want to scrap the First Amendment so that they can label as hate speech any expression of truth they don't like and make it illegal. They work through Jewish organizations like the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, and the so-called Southern Poverty Law Center. These un-American organizations attempt to frighten the public into giving up their freedom in return for the promise of a little more security. And they work through the government. The people in the Clinton administration are eager to give them the new laws they want. Bill Clinton and Janet Reno would love to round up everyone who is not politically correct. The only thing which holds them back is fear of the public reaction. They are afraid of what that 50% of the public who agree with Mr. Brando might do. Our job is to keep disseminating the truth as widely as we can, so that that 50% will grow to 60%, and to 70%, and to 80%. Our job is to let the Clintonistas know that when they move to take away our freedom, they will have a revolution on their hands. Our job is to build a pipeline for truth and inspiration so big that it cannot be shut off. And with your help, one of these days, we will take Hollywood away from the Jews, and we will use it to build a new climate in America, a climate in which valor can once again flourish. Thanks for your help, and thanks for being with me today.